Just a quick word from our sponsor before we jump into today's episode. Optimizing your internal processes can often be a huge unlock for streamlining revenue and getting you and your team, if you have one, out of a manual process. If you're looking to reduce costs and headaches in one fell swoop, consider graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. It's the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere, and you cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all of your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Everything seems to be more expensive these days, so proven ways to cut costs and boost performance at the same time, like NetSuite, are kind of a no-brainer. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/SPI. netsuite.com/SPI. Once again, netsuite.com/SPI. And now a quick word from our sponsor before we start the show. Ready to earn sustainable income while creating the work you're passionate about? Get started with Memberful. Whether you teach online courses, host a podcast, run a blog, or write a newsletter, Memberful has all the tools you need to unlock revenue and deeply connect with your audience through subscription membership. Their platform allows you to easily gate content, communicate with your audience, and tier membership access directly on your own website. Plus, with Memberful, there's no need to change your workflow. They work seamlessly and integrate with the tools you already use, including MailChimp, Discord, Zapier, ConvertKit, Google Analytics, and more. Utilize their powerful built-in features and dashboards and watch your business grow. The best part? Memberful gives you full control and ownership of your audience, your brand, and your business. Get started for free at memberful.com/SPI. One more time, that's memberful.com/SPI. This is the Smart Passive Income Podcast with Pat Flynn, session number 214. Here we go.
Welcome to the Smart Passive Income Podcast, where it's all about working hard now so you can sit back and reap the benefits later. And now your host. He imagines a hamster in a ball every time he sees BB-8. Pat Flynn.
Hey, and real quick, our sponsor today is Uplift Desk, creators of office furniture designed to help you work better and live healthier. If you haven't tried a sit/stand desk before, this offer from Uplift is the perfect opportunity. Plus, you can support the show at the same time. Visit upliftdesk.com/SPI for 5% off your order. A desk should fit the user, right? Which is exactly why Uplift Desk has a ton of customization options. They're stable, the materials are solid. I mean, just the choices of material alone are incredible, all the way from laminate to eco to bamboo and even solid wood. The option to stand while working is just healthier, better circulation, better movement, which helps to reduce all kinds of different health risks and repetitive strains. And over 1 million customers have chosen Uplift Desk for their innovative designs, direct-to-consumer pricing, same-day shipping. They can even give you free accessories with every desk. Uplift is a great deal, and they're built to last and include an industry-leading 15-year warranty, free shipping, free return shipping if you need to do that as well. So go to upliftdesk.com/SPI for 5% off your order. That's upliftdesk.com/SPI to get 5% off your entire order. Yo, what's up, everybody? Thank you so much for joining me today in session 214 of the Smart Passive Income Podcast. My name is Pat Flynn, and I'm just so thankful you're here with me today. And it's not just me today. We also have a great friend of the Smart Passive Income community, somebody who was in, I believe it was episode 68. So that was quite a long time ago. This is Neil Patel from neilpatel.com, also quicksprout.com. A lot of you also know him because he's the founder of Crazy Egg and Kissmetrics and a number of other tools and other great pieces of software. He's created 4 multi-million dollar businesses, and he consults a lot of other great businesses too. He's just a wealth of knowledge. And I brought him on the show today to talk specifically about content, managing content, how to approach content, how to know what to write about, how many articles you should launch with if you're just launching for the first time, how often you should be blogging and putting content out there into the world, and how to make the most out of that too, because we put so much hard work into our content. A lot of it just gets put in the archives, or, you know, we often do too much, and what's just right. So I asked Neil and I pick his brain on that to help you, and Neil definitely delivered on this episode. So without further ado, no more talking. Here we go, right into the interview with Neil Patel from neilpatel.com and quicksprout.com. Hey, what's up, everybody? Pat here with Neil Patel back on the show with us. Neil from QuickSprout. What's up, Neil? Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. Last time you were on the show, I get a lot of guests who are on the show. They deliver value, but not as many get so many requests from the audience to have those guests come back as you do. So, Neil, thank you for being back here. We're going to talk all about content marketing today and all the ins and outs of it. I feel that you are one of the leading experts in not just being consistent with and creating content, but creating the right kind of content, content that actually matters to your audience, but also that you could use as leverage for growing your brand, growing your email list and all that stuff. So we're going to dive right in. And I want to start out by just asking you a question and kind of starting off by saying, you know, gone are the days where we can just put up whatever. You know, back in the day, you could just write about a particular topic, and as long as it included certain keywords, you know, you could get found in Google and whatnot and get some leverage on that. But you have to actually come up with good stuff now, good topics. How do you, Neil, and how does your team come up with the topics to write about? I think let's just start there. How do you know what to write about?
Sure. So the simplest thing to do is, there's already so many blog posts out there. It's look what's already on the web that's done well and hasn't done well. You can use a tool called BuzzSumo. It's free. You type in keywords and it'll show you what's being written in your space in the last year, 2 years, etc. The reason this is really important is blog posts that worked 2-3 years ago won't work anymore. There's too much regurgitated information out there on the internet in which people now are looking for advanced information that they haven't read. So you have to first figure out, hey, one, what are people writing about? And avoid all the topics that have been beaten to death. Two, look at what's hot. So when you use BuzzSumo and you type in keywords, it'll show you, hey, here are X, Y, or 10 headlines or 50 headlines that have done extremely well in your space. You can then take that data and figure out, all right, here's some headlines that work. Let me see if I can write iterations of that topic, but make it way more advanced. And that's the key. There's one word that makes content successful these days. It's advanced. So anything that's advanced that people loved before, but it's a newer version that's more detailed, more thorough, and it gives new techniques or tips that people have never seen before, that's the kind of stuff that does extremely well these days.
Okay, I like that. So just to summarize that, BuzzSumo is the tool. That's correct, right, Neil?
BuzzSumo is a tool, and look for what people have wrote. Don't write the old stuff that they have already regurgitated. Take all the top posts and see if you can write something that's more advanced and thorough. Typically, if you do that, your posts should do really well. And also look at their headlines. Headlines is half the battle. If your headline sucks, it doesn't matter how good the content is, people won't click on it and read.
Okay, so let's dive into the headlines really quick. I think that's really important. You could obviously write the best content in the world, but if the headline's terrible, nobody's going to feel compelled to open it or read it or keep going with it. What makes a great headline for you?
Yeah, so there's a few things. I actually created an infographic on this years ago. And with the headline, what I ended up learning was that A, if it's too long, like it's more than 6 words roughly, so that's the average. If it's 6, 7, or 8, that's fine. If it starts getting to 10, 12, it doesn't do as well. If it's too short, it doesn't do well either. I don't know why, but that's what the data showed, because we just started computing tons of headline data. I have a data scientist, and that's all he was doing for me for a while.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that we noticed was how-to guides and lists do extremely well. I know people say they've been beaten to death. People still love them. Just look at magazine articles when you walk down a grocery store in the aisle at the checkout area. A lot of those magazine covers have how-to or list type of posts in there, right, or articles. It wouldn't be a post in a magazine. So that still does really well. Adjectives do extremely well. Anything that evokes curiosity does well. BuzzFeed is a good example of this. And also doing headlines that are really descriptive. So people don't like vague headlines anymore. That worked extremely well 5-6 years ago. But the trend that we've seen is the more specific you get within your headline, the more well it does. And most writers think, hey, if I get too specific, then no one's going to read it. And that's correct. You're going to exclude a big portion of the audience. But the people who do read it, they're much more likely to comment and share.
Got it. Do you have an example from any article that you've written or any one that you've seen recently of a good headline that includes some of those things?
There's no one good headline for every type of site. Reason being is a headline that works in the consumer space, for example, like BuzzFeed, won't work well in the B2B space. Evoking curiosity if you're a B2B company, doesn't do that well. For example, BuzzFeed will use headlines like, someone got a tattoo inked or someone put a red tattoo on their body. And what happened next will freak you out, right? Mm-hmm. And that may not be the best headline, but that's just an example of evoking curiosity. Those kind of headlines work really well for consumers on BuzzFeed and news and gossip type of sites. Those headlines would not work really well on a B2B site. If someone's reading an article on your blog, their business, they're looking to improve and grow, they're not going to really get attracted to clickbait like that.
Yeah.
So you have to adapt it to your audience. And that's why BuzzSumo is such a good free tool. And I have nothing to do with it, right? I don't own shares. I'm not involved in it.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll show you, because if you type in keywords within your space, it'll show you what's hot and what's not. And you can end up seeing, oh, in my space, no one's using headlines that evoke curiosity, because they'll rank the headlines based on popularity, and popularity is social shares. Well, in the B2C world, if you're seeing people use those type of headlines, then you know they work and you should be doing more of them.
Got it. Okay. So you're just pretty much looking at what's already working out there and implying what is, and just making sure not to copy, but also make things better than what's already out there. So you're kind of using what's already existing as a guideline for yourself, so you're not just starting from scratch. I think this is great. Now, when it comes to, okay, let's say you found a topic, or you come up with a headline that's great. What do you do to prepare yourself to create this content? Do you do any research? Do you use any specific tools beyond BuzzSumo to help you with the actual writing portion to make sure that the actual content that's included in that post is unique and great?
Yeah, I do. So the first thing I do is I outline the post. I'll use Microsoft Word. I know a lot of people hate that tool, but I love it. I go into Microsoft Word. I even pay the damn monthly subscription or yearly. I don't know what it is, but it sucks. I wish I could just pay the one-time price, but they don't have that option anymore. So I use Microsoft Word. I outline. I start with the headline. I write the introduction. And then I bullet out the main points that I want to discuss in the body, just like the headings. And then from there, I write the conclusion. Then I go in and I fill in the rest, reread it, add images, and publish. That's my writing process. Now, as I'm writing and coming up with the data points, either A, I'll know the topic like the back of my hand and I can just get cranking,
mm-hmm.
or B, I need to do some research. When I do research, I'm just doing Google searches, like trying to plug in information. Like, I know if I'm talking about increasing rankings on how title tags can adjust how many your ranking positioning. So then what I'll do is I'll Google for relevant articles that have stats or data, type in keywords in Google, and then link to those sources. Even if I know what I'm talking about, I will still go back, do a quick few Google searches, and then try to link to other articles that back up the points I'm trying to make. The reason this is really important is if you want to be seen as an authority figure, you want to get more social shares, you can't just write content based on your opinions. Yeah, sure, if you're a political site, by all means, go ahead and do that. Hmm. But with most blogs, people want data to back up whatever claims you're making.
Got it. And this applies also for other forms of content, right? Like video or podcasting too, correct?
Yeah, just like you can't go and say, hey, I have a really popular podcast. I know what I'm doing. Here's how to market it. And if you just say that, there's no validity to your claim. If you say, hey, I'm Pat. Everyone loves the Smart Passive Income podcast. And you know, it's so popular that we get 100,000 views per episode according to X, Y, and Z. Now when you give tips on, hey, here's how you can create and grow your own podcast, people are much more likely to listen because you've shown them or you've told them that according to X, Y, and Z source, I'm getting at least 100,000 listens per podcast.
Right, right. It legitimizes not just my points, but myself in the process. So to regurgitate what you just said, you outline this topic first and you actually write the intro out to help probably your thoughts, and then you write down bullet points of the things you want to cover. Then you actually write out the conclusion too. Why do you write out the intro and the conclusion before you get to the kind of meat of the article?
Meat takes the longest. If you don't have a good intro and a good conclusion, no one's going to read the meat. I do a lot of heat map testing with blog posts, and the pattern that we continually see is a lot of people read the intro, they scroll all the way down, they read the conclusion, and then if they're happy, they go and read the rest.
That's interesting. That is really interesting. What tools are you using to kind of see that?
I just use Crazy Egg, right? I use a scroll map report on there.
Yeah, Crazy Egg. Of course you use Crazy Egg, right? That's your...
That's why I don't want to mention it, because it's mine. And I'm like, I don't want to say it. That's what I was like. I just use a heat map.
No, it's a great product. I was just curious to see if that's actually what you would say. So Crazy Egg is a great analytical tool that you can use. It's beyond just the numbers. It's actually how people use your site, what's hot, what's cold. And so you can make actual changes. I've used it myself for a lot of the design changes that you see on the website now. And it's a great tool. So crazyegg.com is where to go for that. Something that I've struggled with, Neil, is getting to a point where I feel like every post has to be this amazing, epic, just, oh my gosh, like knock them over the head with value kind of posts. And that has often stopped me from writing some stuff or publishing some stuff because it's not, I feel like it's not good enough. But then you had mentioned a post earlier that was like about title tags, and it seemed like it was a very small topic, but I'm sure that's something that people were interested in. How do you balance trying to come up with something amazing and great and epic versus, you know, some of the smaller items out there that may not seem as so, but also are still helpful?
Think of your blog as a store. When someone goes into a store, people are different types of shoppers. Some may want to buy 10 things. Some may want to buy one thing. Some shoppers buy a product based on looking, trying it on, reading the box, the material. Some just look at it, and if they like it, they buy. Just like a shop, your blog will have different types of readers. Some will be advanced. Some will be basic. Some will want to read 5,000-word posts or listen to an hour-long podcast. Some may just want to read a 500-word post. Now, I'm not saying write a 500-word post or do a 5-minute podcast because you can't give much value in, you know, 30 words or 100 words, unless it's just breaking news and you can put it out in, you know, 200 words or whatever it may be.
Right.
What I would recommend doing is write your real cornerstone pieces of content, the epic pieces, the ones that are so thorough and so good that it's going to drive a ton of traffic. And that'll help build the foundation for your blog. At the same time, you'll notice that those pieces will start bringing in other visitors from Google, social media sites, etc. A lot of those visitors may not want to read 5,000-word posts on a continual basis, especially for someone like you who collects emails, because then you're remarketing to your list every time you release a new blog post or whenever you blast out to them. So you also want to write posts that are good that just answer specific questions. For example, Quora. It's really popular because people have questions and they want the answers. So you could end up writing a 1,000-word post on, let's say, how to adjust your title tags to maximize your search engine ranking. It's basic. A lot of people have already known about it. The post isn't going to do as well. But because your blog has so much authority due to those epic pieces of content, those other smaller pieces will still do well. They won't get as much traffic, but they'll rank high on Google. You may not want to blast it out to your whole email list because then you're going to burn it by just releasing short pieces of content. If it's good enough, people won't mind. Just don't blast out every piece of content to your email list and do a bit of variety. So do long posts, short posts, posts that could be videos or images or podcasts, whatever it may be, but think of it as a shop. Not every person coming to your blog is the same. You have to have different pieces of content for different reader types.
I like that. Now, for somebody just starting out, though, maybe they're about to launch their blog, how many posts would you recommend to have on when they launch, and what kind of posts in terms of length and epicness and smallness, or, you know, what would an ideal launch look like when a blog launches for the first time? What kind of content should be on there at the start?
Yeah, there should only be one piece of content, the one that you just wrote and published. You don't want to have 5-10 pieces, launch a blog, and then people think they can go and read the old one. Because you know what? If you look at the analytics on most blogs, whoever comes to your blog and reads one article, the chances are they're not going to read another article. Don't publish 5 or 4 or even 2 before you launch. Just write one epic piece of content, and only write epic piece of content, like really thorough, detailed guides, long to the point, thorough. It doesn't necessarily have to be long in text. It could be long in audio or video, whatever it may be, or even thorough in images. Release it. Do at least 5 of those over the course of the next 30 to 45 days, and then you can start mixing it in with shorter posts.
So start off strong, you're saying, with the content that you're coming out with. Obviously, make some noise out there with the epic content that you're writing. And it's interesting because in the podcasting world, the best practice is to launch with 3 to 5 episodes. And that's because people with podcasts, they'll binge listen. You know, once they listen to one, they'll want to keep listening, and that allows you to get more chances to have your call to action in front of them and more subscribes and more downloads. It's great in the beginning of your of the life of your podcast. But you're saying it's the actually the opposite with blog posts. And, you know, that sort of makes sense because I look at my analytics even now that I've been blogging a long time. I mean, most people on the site will go 2.5 page views or 3 page views at most on average. And that's, that's not a whole lot.
No, and your analytics are above average by far. Most people on your blog, I'm going to guess, go to your homepage. I think you have a section for your income report.
Yep.
Unless you change that. And then they also can go to a blog post. And I'm assuming your income reports are really popular.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Most people don't even get 2 page views for every visitor. They're averaging like 1.2 to 1.7.
So for that first time that person who's just launching is launching their epic blog post, what can they do to maximize that post? I guess this is a question for everybody, really, but specifically for that first-time blogger, they're putting out that epic post. You know, a lot of times we feel like when we write something that great, it should be seen, but when we're just starting out, there's really nobody to see it. So how do we make sure that people see it? Do you do any promotion for a launch of a blog before that post actually goes live? How do you approach it?
I don't do any preparation, and you may be saying, hey, Neil, you have a big social following, so it's easier for you, but I'll share the strategy that works for any niche, any vertical, even if you have 0 social media followers. As I mentioned earlier, when you write a blog post, you want to link out to other sources that back up the data points that you're making, correct?
Correct.
So when you do that, typically if you have a 1,000-word blog post, you're usually linking out 10 times. You don't want to link out just to link out. You want to link out when A, backs up your points, and B, is relevant to the reader. So when I publish a blog post, I'll email all of those people that I linked out to, and I'll say, hey, Pat, I just want to let you know I'm a huge fan of Smart Passive Income. So much so that I even linked out to you in my latest blog post. Feel free to check it out here. Cheers, Neil. P.S. Yep. It would make my decade, not year, but decade, if you shared it on your favorite social site. And that's it. And by doing that, you usually get like 20, 30%, sometimes 40, it depends on the industry, to share out your article. So if you wrote a 5,000-word blog post, you link out like 50 times, you're going to get quite a few social shares. The other thing I do is, using a tool that we talked about earlier, BuzzSumo, I type in the specific URL of highly popular content in my space. Because if you wrote an article on growing a podcast or creating a podcast, you can type in those words into BuzzSumo. It shows you popular articles in your space. And it shows them by a Facebook count, tweet count, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Now just look for the tweet count. Then take that URL, the ones that have a lot of tweets and shares, take that URL, put it into Twitter search feature, right? So you go twitter.com/search, put in the URL. It'll show you every single person that shared that article. Click on their bio, and some of them, or click on their username. Some of them have bios, websites. You can Google their name. You can try to find their email address. Once you find their email address, shoot each of those individuals out an email saying like, hey, Pat, I noticed that you shared an article called 52 Ways to create and share a podcast. I've actually created a similar article that is about 101 ways to create and share a podcast, right? The title needs to be better, but you get the gist.
Right.
Let me know if you'd like to check it out. I think you'll love it, and it'll be beneficial to your followers as well. And that's it. You'll get quite a few responses, well above 10%. It'll be under 30% of people who'll be like, yeah, I would love to see it. As they respond, you say, here it is. Cheers, Pat. P.S. If you love it, feel free and share it on your favorite social network.
So you're not sharing it on first contact?
No. You're getting them engaged.
Cool.
If you link to them, you can ask them to share on first contact. If you don't link to them, you want to engage and create a conversation. If you go up to a random stranger and you say, hey, marry me, that's really weird. Someone doesn't even know you. And I know asking for a tweet isn't as big of a deal. But if you get to know someone, you talk to them, and then you ask them to marry you, you have a much better chance. They'll still probably say no, but you have a much better chance than if you ask someone to marry you without saying anything else.
Awesome. I love that strategy. So BuzzSumo to find the top shared articles via Twitter about that particular topic. Put that URL for that those top posts in Twitter advanced search, and you'll be able to find the actual users who shared that post. And you know, because of that, that they've found interest in that particular topic. So you could reach out to them, say you have something similar. Don't link out to your article right away because you just met them. Engage with them first. And when they reply, if they do, then you could share that article. If not, then no harm, no foul.
Exactly.
Great.
So if you don't have a following, you don't have a budget for marketing, if you follow that strategy, you will get traffic to your blog.
Okay, so let's give something to the more advanced users out there who have been blogging and creating content for a while. So let's say we've been doing it, we've been consistent, we're growing steadily. What's something we could do content related that could really give us a huge bump or spike in our email subscriptions, but more than that, just exposure? So what's one or two particular things that we could do that you've done yourself that we could do to really just, you know, things have been great and consistent, but we really want a big spike in our future. How do we make that spike happen?
Once you have an audience, you're a bit more advanced, I would start doing roundups. There's a lot on the web. If you take everyone who's popular in your industry and your blog's been around for a while, who wouldn't be like, yeah, sure, I would love free press. I want to be included in the roundup. So you can say, like, here's what 101 experts have to say about content marketing. Right. And then you can say, like, number 13 will shock you. I don't know. I'm making it up. And then when you interview 101 of them, once you publish it, they're going to all want to share it. You just email them saying, hey, the article's live. Feel free to share it. And that does extremely well. Like, those type of posts get thousands and thousands of visitors.
How do you, it's easy to say to go and interview 100 people and facilitate that. But how does one manage that whole process? So you want to do a roundup post. Maybe you're going to be like, okay, I'm going to find all the experts out there and they're all going to answer one question for me. What's the best way to approach the organization of that you found?
So Google has this thing, like you can create your form fields that people fill out. It's in Google Docs. And we send them the link and then they click it and then they just type in the response. They type in their name, their URL, their Twitter handle, and they type in their response. The reason you do it that way is you now can, when you publish a post, you can just copy their URL, their name, their Twitter handle, etc. And the beautiful part about this is a lot of people take that link and send it to other experts and be like, oh, I'm in this roundup. Do you want to be included in it as well? And then now you have a Google Sheet that has all the information and text in there. You copy and paste it, format it into a blog post, and you're good to go.
Wow. Okay. So create a Google form. The Google form, correct me if I'm wrong, those entries actually can get put into a spreadsheet. That makes it even easier to kind of organize and see all that.
Yes.
Okay. And because you're sharing that link, might you even say, hey, here's a link to where you can fill out this information. If you know anybody else who's also done A, B, or C, feel free to share it with them too.
Exactly.
And then you might end up getting hundreds of responses, and then literally it's just copy paste from there. I think that's, man, I've been looking for a great way to facilitate that. And I've always just reached out kind of on Skype or Twitter. And then sometimes I get Twitter responses. Sometimes I get email responses or, you know, they'll text me and it just becomes a huge mess. So I think that's a great approach. And I think that's something that will definitely help people get a spike. Is that something a beginner could do too? I feel like it can be done, but maybe they won't have as much authority and people might not say yes as much. But is that still, are roundup posts still smart for those who are just starting out too?
Yeah, you got it right. It will work for beginners as well. They're just not going to get the response rate compared to someone who's has an established blog and is more well-known in the industry.
Very cool. All right, so we're closing up here. We've talked about a lot of great actionable things. How do you best make your content work for you? And specifically, I'm talking about content that's in your archive. I think a lot of us have been blogging for a while. We have content in any sort of format that's been around that just, you know, was great when it came out, but it kind of got lost because we've just written so much more stuff since then. How do we re-engage our older content? What are the best ways to bring people back or bring those old articles back to life?
Sure. So I'm going to give you some rough numbers. My personal blog, neilpatel.com, it's still new, gets around 190-something thousand unique visitors a month, or at least that's what it's on track for in March.
Nice.
And out of those 190-something thousand visitors, 80-plus come from social. Out of those 80-plus that come from social, almost two-thirds of it is from older posts. And what I do is on a daily basis, I try to share at least one old article on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn that's done well. So I'll take an article that I wrote a year or two ago, and the blog hasn't been up that long, but let's say a year ago, and it did well, got tons of social shares, and then I'll go share it again to the same audience because a lot of people forgot about it or missed it, never saw it in the first place. And if it did well in the past, chances are it's going to do well again in the future. So that's one strategy. The other strategy I do is older posts tend to rank better on search engines. So I use Google Search Console. It's a free tool from Google, and you have to verify that you're the site owner. And what it'll do is show you your rankings per page, your click-through rate, and how many impressions that article got, and what keywords it was for. So then you'll take those pages that have a low click-through rate and decent ranking and start adjusting the title tags. The title tag, in this case, because you're a blog, would be the title of the post. So you want to adjust it to be more keyword-rich, yet it's still readable by a human and still sexy and appealing so that they'll want to click through. And if you can find the perfect match, right, I can't tell you that, hey, just add in this keyword or adjust it by this and you're going to get a ton more clicks. It doesn't always work that way. But you'll find yourself ranking for specific terms. If that term is at the end of your title tag, in many cases, moving it towards the beginning increases click-through. That's just one tip. Putting how-to lists, evoking curiosity, right, adjusting your title tag with some of those elements also increases clicks. Now, you'll want to put how-to in your title if the post isn't a how-to type of post. You could adjust the post if you want to put the how-to in there. But if you do these things, you'll notice you'll get an increase in click-through rates. If your click-through rate goes up, your rankings will go up over time. This will help your old posts continually get more traffic from sources like Google, which will outweigh any sort of traffic you're getting for a brand new blog post through social or any sites like that.
Nice. Okay, so to recap that, you know, we have older posts that are typically found on Google search, and we could use Google Search Console to see what those posts are. And sometimes you'll come across posts that are ranking, but they just have a low click-through rate, meaning when people find them in Google and they're on the results page, not very many people are actually clicking on those because maybe the title tag is uninteresting. So you can actually adjust those, and will they adjust in real time in Google, or how long would it take to kind of populate?
No, look at your data in two-week tranches, and typically when a low click-through rate is anything under 5%, you'll find a ton of pages that have under a 5% click-through.
And then you can just adjust those and check 2 weeks later and see how it's increased.
Yes, and Google has a date range picker in Search Console, so you would just say, all right, I made the change today, and I'm going to wait 2 weeks. Keep in mind, the data in Search Console is at least 2 to 3 days delayed.
Okay.
So when you make a change, you've got to wait 2-3 more days. And from that point, the data will then be accurate with the new title.
Awesome. Neil, what do you feel is the biggest mistake people out there who are blogging or creating content make?
They're not consistent. The biggest thing that kills a blog or makes it not succeed in the first place is inconsistency. If you can't blog once a week or once a month, pick whatever the frequency is, but just be consistent with it, you won't do well. And ideally, it should be at least once a week. I haven't seen too many blogs create content once a month and then just crush it. It typically has to be at least once a week, ideally 2 or 3 times a week. And if you're not willing to put in the effort, then don't blog on your own site. Just guest post on other people's sites.
What do you feel about Medium.com?
Medium's not
exposure.
Bad. It's a great way to generate more traffic. A lot of people are on there. They use it more like a journal. Whenever you want to write, you write. If you don't want to write, you don't write. I just don't like the concept of, again, if you want to use it for guest posting, by all means do it. I don't like the concept of having your main blog on like a Medium or a Tumblr. I like it on my own domain using WordPress. The reason I use WordPress is it's open source. It's flexible. There's a lot of plugins that make your life easy, and it doesn't cost any money. Plus, you can control it. So if you have a popular blog like yours, you release your income reports. I don't know what your last month's income was, but I'm guessing it's around 6 figures a month, right?
Yes.
Plus or minus 10, 20,000 bucks. So if you look at your income reports, would you have been able to generate that much income if you were on Medium or Tumblr?
Definitely not.
Exactly. And that's why I recommend people not to fully blog on Medium or Tumblr. Use it as a guest posting platform. Don't use it as your main blog.
What's the, you had mentioned the biggest mistake is inconsistency. How does one stay consistent? What are one or two things that, or pieces of advice you have to allow people to be consistent with their content, not just picking a frequency, but do you, is it, I don't know, tools, or do you actually schedule out when you write? And, you know, what are some devices you use to help keep you consistent?
I use a content calendar. There's a lot of WordPress plugins that are free that are content calendar related, or you can just use your Google Calendar to map out when you're going to blog. I also map out when topics are going to be released. You know how we mentioned earlier, hey, when you're releasing a blog, how many posts you have published? And I say zero, just the one that you're writing that day should be up.
Mm-hmm.
But before I publish a blog or before I really try to grow one, I have at least four or five pieces of content written in advance. They're not published. They're just written in advance.
Okay.
That way you can consistently crank out content, and you should plan out, hey, I'm going to be writing every week during this time, and you have to come up with the topics in advance.
Yeah, I've learned that scheduling that kind of stuff really helps me. For me, Monday is my writing day. Tuesday is my podcasting day. And since actually making that concrete in my life, it's been a lot better. And I have become more consistent. So that definitely helps. And Neil, thank you so much for all that and everything. I mean, every time you come on the show, you always bring super actionable strategies and tactics for people. So I know I speak for everyone when I say thank you for that. And also, where can people find out more about you? Like, what are the big things you have going on right now that we could support?
Sure. You can find out about me more at neilpatel.com. And the big thing that I'm releasing soon is a book. I'm just trying to get it out there. It's called Hustle, and hopefully people buy it. I think it'll do well.
Nice. When's it coming out?
September.
September. All right, man. We'll look out for it.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Neil. We appreciate you. All right, I hope you enjoyed that episode with Neil Patel. Again, you can find him at Neil Patel. That's NEILPATEL.com. Also, quicksprout.com. And actually, on neilpatel.com, there's a lot of great tools, free tools that you can use to help you do a number of things. For example, SEO analysis. And there's a marketing checklist you could download and all this, you know, competitive intelligence. And he's just a super smart guy, as you could tell, and has a lot of experience building multi-million dollar businesses. And I know him as a content marketing expert. And I hope that you got a lot out of this episode. I did. I remember conducting this interview and just getting so much out of it. I was taking massive notes, and I'm sure a lot of you have done the same. So if you want to check him out, neilpatel.com. You can also check out the show notes for this episode on SPI at smartpassiveincome.com/session214. Again, that's smartpassiveincome.com/session214. Also, I want to take a quick moment just to thank you. I don't know if you realize this, but you, the listeners, have made a massive impact on the direction of where Smart Passive Income has gone. As a result of you, I've been interviewing certain guests that you've recommended. As a result of your recommendations, I've been tackling different topics that are of high interest to you. In addition to that, I created a brand new podcast called Ask Pat, which you may have heard of before. And on that show, I answer voicemail questions from you as well. You can actually check that out at askpat.com. But that wouldn't happen if it wasn't for you. Obviously, Ask Pat, there needs to be questions in addition to my answers in order to make that show a success. And I'm so thankful that it's there. And I have you to thank for that. I also have you to thank for pushing me to create some online courses to help you through a number of the different problems and pains that you might be having with your online business, the scaling of it, just even the start and the process of it. Even though there's a lot of great free information here via the podcast, I know this from my own experience as well, courses can be life-changing because you purchase a course and you are just in that mindset of actually doing that thing that course tells you to do. And I have a number of different courses available to you if that's the kind of thing you need in order to actually finally start getting results and taking action. So I know a number of you have already taken action, which is fine. Like, I'm not trying to push these courses on you, but they are there and available for those of you who would much prefer to get that targeted information and the accountability and the handholding through those processes. So if you want to check out and see all the courses that are available to you, all you have to do is go to smartpassiveincome.com/courses. That's a page that's going to continually grow over time as well. So keep checking back, smartpassiveincome.com/courses. And I look forward to hopefully seeing you there. Thank you so much. I appreciate you. And I look forward to serving you in next week's episode, where we're going to be continuing our conversation about content. And I'm actually inviting my content/editorial manager, who has been just a massive addition to the team here on Team SPI, who has really cracked the whip on making sure that everything is being done on time, that we're actually ahead of schedule. Everything from Ask Pat to the podcast to the blog content to SPI TV. She's really the mastermind behind what the content has become over the last 6 months here on SPI. And so we're going to talk with her and talk about kind of what she got into and how she helped fix the problems that were happening before she came on board and what we're doing to get ahead to. So you'll hear from Janet in the next episode. Until then, thank you so much. I appreciate you. And if you have a moment, please leave a review on iTunes. I don't ask for them much, but sometimes I forget because I know that a lot of you just need to be reminded sometimes to leave a review. They help out very much. Doesn't have to be very long. Just an honest review on iTunes would be massively helpful for the show. Thank you. Cheers. See you next week. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Passive Income Podcast at www.smartpassiveincome.com.
Starting a business can feel daunting and confusing, but it doesn't have to be. That's why Terry Rice started the Launch Your Business podcast, another awesome show from the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Each week, Terry shares strategic actions, specific tools, and what he refers to as high-performance mindsets that allow you to thrive under pressure. Recent guests include rapper T.I., Amy Porterfield, and yours truly. And Terry frequently publishes value pack solo shows too, like this one titled How to Write Proposals That Get Accepted and Don't Take Forever to Write. Great stuff. So make sure you listen in to Launch Your Business right now on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, or Stitcher.